This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Welcome to Military Times. My name is Mark Love, and our first article comes from the front page. Could a fighter jet software upgrade have saved Pollock's life? Dated November 20th, 2024. Lieutenant Richard Max Bullock took the last flight of his life on June 3rd, 2022, when his F-18E Super Hornet launched from Naval Air Station Lemoore and commenced training near California's Death Valley National Park. That afternoon, the 29-year-old executed air-to-ground strafe and slow-speed basic maneuvers when he is believed to have suffered a bout of gravity-induced loss of consciousness, or GLOC, a condition where a pilot goes unconscious due to a lack of blood flow to the brain, according to an internal investigation obtained by Navy Times. Bullock was incapacitated when his jet quickly descended from 7,300 feet and crashed near Trona at 2:07 p.m. local time. His ejection seat was properly installed, and the investigation found that Bullock did not attempt to initiate an injection. Due to the relatively low altitude that this maneuver was executed, the pilot did not have enough time to regain consciousness before impacting the ground, the investigation states. Now, 2.5 years later, after the young aviator's death, questions have emerged about why a system that keeps a jet airborne if a pilot loses consciousness was never installed in Navy Super Hornets, and if such a system might have prevented Bullock's death. The system is known as Automated Ground Collision Avoidance System, or AutoGCAS, and is designed to temporarily take control of a jet for short periods of time if the pilot blacks out or gets distracted. Military aviators who reviewed the Bullock investigation told Navy Times. But for reasons the Navy has declined to explain, AutoGCAS has not been installed in the Sea Services Super Hornet fleet. The Air Force installed AutoGCAS on its F-16 and F-22 fighter jets and credits the system with saving the lives of 16 aviators since 2014. The Marine Corps Legacy Hornets are also slated to receive AutoGCAS next year. According to Naval Air Forces, and the software is already installed on all F-35 jets, according to the platform's Joint Program Office. Despite repeated queries by Navy Times, the Navy has refused to explain why AutoGCAS is not in Super Hornets, and whether the service believes a lack of AutoGCAS played a role in Bullock's death. AutoGCAS remains an area that the team continually assesses during safety review boards and provides annual updates to the fleet. As safety is our number one priority, Naval Air Force's spokesperson, Commander Beth Teach, said in an email to Navy Times. The Naval Safety Command, which conducts its own investigations into such mishaps, declined to say whether its investigation found a lack of AutoGCAS to have been a factor in Bullock's death. While the Navy remains mum to such questions, some aviators with direct AutoGCAS experience believe the system would have prevented Bullock's fatal crash. Lieutenant Colonel Billy Flynn is a retired pilot with the Royal Canadian Air Force. Flynn also served as a test pilot with Lockheed Martin, who flew the U.S. Navy, Marine Corps, and Air Force, and has tested out three different AutoGCAS systems. After reviewing the Bullock crash investigation, Flynn unequivocally stated that Bullock would still be alive if AutoGCAS was installed in his aircraft. AutoGCAS would have saved Lieutenant Bullock, period, Flynn told Navy Times. He isn't the only member of the aviator community to reach that conclusion. An active duty Air Force aviator familiar with AutoGCAS, who reviewed the investigation and was granted anonymity, also told Navy Times that he believes the technology would have saved Bullock's life. What's the price of a very talented young Navy aviator, Flynn said. I would submit that there is no price for that. You can't replace Lieutenant Bullock. And how do you explain to his parents, his family, that you could have implemented this at some point and not chose not to? Because it wasn't a true value to Navy leadership. I don't think you can answer that question. Instantaneous G. To decrease the likelihood of suffering G-lock, pilots undergo specific centrifuge training to better equip their bodies to tolerate strong G-forces. but pilots still carry risk with them in a cockpit, and auto-GCAS helps mitigate that risk, according to Flynn. In a Super Hornet, the instantaneous G is so sudden that if you're not perfectly prepared, then your body might not be ready for the Gs that you're about to experience. And that historically has contributed to pilots blacking themselves out, he said. Pilots typically regain useful consciousness between 45 to 60 seconds after blacking out, according to Flynn. Flynn said he thinks the Navy and NAVAIR understand the benefits of auto GCAS, but have been opted to not spend the money and time installing the system in the Super Hornet fleet because it's never been important enough for Navy leaders. Navy leadership, including the leadership of at NAVAIR, have all been briefed and are keenly aware of the capabilities that auto GCAS brings and the potential to save aircraft and lives, Flynn said. Flynn added that G-lock isn't as common now as it once was in aviators due to advancements in training and ensuring G-suits fit properly, and therefore leadership isn't as inclined to believe installing the technology is worth the effort. Teach of Naval Air Forces told Navy Times that no other naval aviators have suffered injury or death due to G-lock-related incidents in the past 5 years, according to the service's Risk Management Information Mishap Reporting System. Max was genuine. According to Strike Fighter Squadron 113 at the time, Bullock was remembered as a young man who packed more into 29 years than most could ever imagine. When asked how he would want to be celebrated, Lieutenant T.J. Hall, Max's wingman, said, "Fast, loud, and awesome," Bullock's obituary states. While he'll be celebrated this way, he'll be remembered as generous beyond belief, a genuine friend, passionate and relentlessly positive and fearless. Bullock's parents, Bill and Robin Bullock, said their son described himself as a possibilitarian who believed anything was possible and loved his country and fellow service members deeply. They said the family honors his memory by thinking about what he would do when making choices in life now. Whenever he would question whether or not he should do something or to go forward with it, one of the kids or one of the parents says, "You know what Max would do." And the automatic answer is he would go for it. He would try it. He would be the first one to be in line to do something and reach out to help others, Robin Bullock told Navy Times. Bullock conducted a thorough brief prior to takeoff on the day of his death, outlining the training rules for basic fighter maneuvers, air-to-ground strafe, and low-level training. The investigation also found that Bullock was prepared for the mission and that human factors did not play a role in the mishap. It determined the aircraft safe for flight and that no malfunctions occurred and that environmental factors such as weather did not contribute to the mishap. The case did not warrant any disciplinary action within the squadron, and the investigation determined the squadron's command climate didn't factor into the mishap. Specifically, the report said that no one interviewed for investigation voiced knowledge of procedural violations, rule breaking, or flat-hatting by any members of the squadron, Bullock included. Flat-hatting is the practice of conducting maneuvers at low altitude or high speed for thrill purposes, according to the Federal Aviation Administration. I have directed that the findings of the investigation will be widely shared with all units under my cognizance to underscore the unforgiving and inherently dangerous nature of naval aviation, which requires the finest sense of judgment and control, a command endorsement of the investigation states. Bullock's obituary recalls him as someone who would start every day with the intent on figuring out how to make the world a better place. Max was genuine. He would strike up conversations and build a friendship with everyone crossing his path. He would listen with interest and appreciation to any story, Bullock's obituary said. He gave the gift of long-term friendship openly and without reservations. And in our next article, the Osprey safety issues cause death. Pilots still want to fly it. Cannon Air Force Base, New Mexico. Over a New Mexico training range named the Hornet, two Ospreys, aircraft speed 100 feet off the ground, banking hard over valleys and hills as they close in on a dusty landing zone. A flight engineer in the back braces a 50 caliber machine gun
over the edge of the Osprey's open ramp as desert shrubbery blurs past. The aircraft's joints shift and rattle, and there is little steady to hold onto until the Osprey touches down with a bump, flooding seats with rust-colored dust. After being grounded for months following a crash last November that killed 8 U.S. service members in Japan, the V-22 Osprey is back in the air, but there are still questions as to whether it should be. The Pentagon bought the V-22 Osprey more than 30 years ago as a lethal hybrid, with the speed of an airplane and a maneuverability of a helicopter. Since then, 64 personnel have been killed and 93 injured in more than 21 major accidents. Japan's military briefly grounded its fleet again late last month after an Osprey tilted violently during takeoff and struck the ground, and 4 recent fatal crashes brought the program to the closest it came to being shut down by Congress. To assess its safety, the Associated Press reviewed thousands of pages of accident reports and flight data obtained through the Freedom of Information Act, interviewed more than 50 current and former program officials, crew members, and experts, and flew both simulator and real training flights. The AP found that the top 3 most serious types of incidents rose 46% between 2019 and 2023, while overall safety issues jumped 18% in the same period before the fleet was grounded. Yet, current and former Osprey pilots, even those who have lost friends in accidents or been in crashes themselves, are some of the aircraft's greatest defenders. Ospreys have been deployed worldwide, landing in deserts and on ship decks, rescuing U.S. service members from ballistic missiles in Iraq, evacuating civilians in Niger, and even standing by ready to protect the president during a surprise trip to Ukraine last year. There's no other platform out there that can do what the V-22 can do, said former Osprey pilot Bruce Luce, who has survived 2 crashes. When everything is going well, it is amazing, but when it's not, it's unforgiving. Unlike other aircraft, the Osprey's problems have not leveled off as the years pass. Instead, they spiked. Even as the number of hours flown has dropped, many of those incidents can be directly tied to the aircraft's design, experts said. Parts are wearing out faster than planned, and it's so complex that a minor mistake by a pilot can turn deadly. While some aspects of the Osprey are now getting modified to make it more reliable, it's unlikely that Osprey's core design will change. With about 400 aircraft that cost between $75 million and $90 million apiece, a major upgrade to the fleet could cost billions. One pilot survives 2 crashes. In 2010, Luce was the co-pilot in the Osprey crash in Afghanistan that killed his aircraft commander, flight engineer, and Army Ranger, and a translator. There was no enemy fire in the final seconds of flight as the Osprey converted to land like a helicopter. It dropped at a rate of more than 1,800 feet per minute. The crash investigation was inconclusive, but found possible crew errors and said the engines may have lost power from sucking in too much dust. 2 years later, Luce was the aircraft commander overseeing a co-pilot on a Florida training range. Luce's aircraft was flying low to the ground and about 750 feet behind the lead Osprey, 3 times the safe minimum distance required. Despite being football fields apart, when both Ospreys banked, their change in position put one of Luce's rotor blades inside the 25-foot vertical separation they needed. It crossed into the wake of the lead aircraft, a turbulent and unpredictable wash of air so strong that crews nicknamed it Superman's Caves. In seconds, Luce's Osprey nearly inverted and began dropping at more than 2,800 feet per minute before crashing and catching fire. All 5 crew members survived. As the most seriously injured were airlifted out, Luce called his wife at the time, his voice shaking. "It happened again," he said. She did not have to ask what he meant. Both the 2010 and 2012 crashes exposed issues with the Osprey that the military still faces today. After Luce's 2012 crash, Osprey pilots warned investigators that the program was in trouble, according to investigation interviews obtained by the AP. Pilots couldn't get enough training hours. Ground maintenance crews couldn't keep enough aircraft flying due to a shortage of parts. To meet costs and schedule targets, the Pentagon's Osprey program office allowed manufacturers Bell and Boeing to turn Osprey over to the military without fully identifying all the ways the aircraft could run into trouble. A 2001 Government Accountability Office report found. So even by Luce's 2012 crash, the military still didn't know the full size of the Osprey's wake, crash investigations found. The fact that they fell out of the sky justifies logic, Luce's commander, Lieutenant Colonel Matt Glover, told crash investigators in documents reviewed by the AP. I wish I could say there's not going to be a next one. But where we are right now, it is if or when, said a second pilot who was flying the Osprey in front of Luce's and whose name is redacted. The Osprey safety record has been challenged in multiple congressional hearings over the years, but each time it has returned for flight. Some members of Congress have said there is no more margin for error. If another Osprey goes down, we're done. This program's done, Representative Stephen Lynch, a Massachusetts Democrat, told Osprey program officials during a hearing this spring. The design of the Osprey is a big challenge. In the 1980s, when the $56 billion V-22 program was in its early stages for Bell Flight and Boeing, the Marine Corps controlled the Osprey's final design because it committed to buying the most. The Marines wanted an aircraft that could carry at least 24 troops, but only take the small same space on the ship deck as the CH-46 helicopter, which the Osprey was replacing. Experts say design choices have affected the Osprey's safety since. The Osprey's prop rotors, which work as propellers when flying like an airplane and as rotor blades when functioning as a helicopter, are too small in diameter for the aircraft's weight, which can top out at about 60,500 pounds. The Osprey's entire engine transmission and prop rotors rotate to a vertical position when it flies like a helicopter, which compromises the engines. That vertical rotation is at the core of what makes the Osprey complex. Crews must watch numerous factors: speed, the angles of the engine and rotor blades, and the up or down position of the aircraft's nose, related to the Osprey's weight and center of gravity to keep it from crashing. The Osprey is twice as heavy as a CH-46, so the rotor blades needed to be longer, but couldn't be because they would have hit the body of the aircraft or the tower on the ship deck. Instead, the Osprey's engines had to be more powerful to help the shorter blades generate enough lift. That creates fast, violent airflow through the rotor blades, which can quickly destabilize the Osprey if one engine has more power than the other. More powerful engines also meant they would weigh more, so engineers designed them to rotate and used their exhaust thrust to help lift the Osprey off the ground. It's an aircraft with a huge amount of performance packed into a very compact space. What that means is that it's a real hot rod to fly, said Richard Brown, a rotorcraft specialist at Sofradyne Aerospace. But it also has these foilables which are baked into the design. Osprey crash go back decades. Problems with the vertical engine caused the aircraft's first fatal accident in 1992. Oils that had pooled while Osprey was flying like an airplane spilled down into the engine as it rotated into a vertical helicopter position, catching fire and killing 7 crew members. In December 2000, repeated transitions to helicopter mode, where the engine and rotor blades rotate upward like a joint elbow joint, wore down one of the hydraulic lines in an Osprey to the point that it ruptured in flight, killing 4 Marines. That led to a grounding and the system redesign. Thus, de-landings presented an added danger. When the Osprey hovers in helicopter mode, the air exhaust it creates can kick up a wall of dust and debris that can get sucked back into the engines, clogging and degrading them. In 2015, a Marine Corps Osprey hovering for 45 seconds in Hawaii disturbed so much sand and dust that the crew had to abort and try again to land because they could no longer see. On their second attempt, the Osprey left engine stalled and the aircraft dropped flat, killing 2 Marines. I heard what sound like the entire aircraft yelling, "Power, power, power," a surviving Marine told investigators, according to redacted interviews obtained by the AP. The ceiling opened like a sardine can. After the accident, Marine Corps put out new guidelines reducing the amount of time the aircraft could hover in dusty environments. But 2 years later, dust was a factor again. Pilots of a Marine Corps Osprey that had been dropping off troops in landing zones in Australia all day were concerned enough about the aircraft's weight and potential accumulated dust in the engines that they wanted troops to pour out their water jugs to cut weight. On their final flight, as the Osprey neared the deck of the transport ship Green Bay, it dropped. Airflow generated by the Osprey had reflected off the ship's deck and back up through the rotors. The pilot applied full throttle, but the engines could not produce enough power to compensate for the loss. The Osprey kept falling, clipped the side of the ship, and fell into the ocean, killing three. It just felt like there was nothing you could do, the lead pilot told investigators. I don't recall seeing anything with the gauges at this point. I just remember being very frightened. The Osprey's manufacturers, Bell Flight and Boeing, both refer questions about whether design changes could be made to either the rotors or design or engine orientation to the Pentagon. In a statement to the AP, Bell said it took the heavier loads into account in its aircraft. While the capabilities of the Osprey have evolved over the years, the envelope of the aircraft based on configuration to support the varied missions has actually not adjusted significantly and was anticipated by the original design, Bell said. The aging aircraft is wearing down. The Osprey's design strains critical components inside, especially in helicopter mode, and those parts are wearing out faster than expected. When the Osprey is flying like a helicopter, everything has to work harder because the engine and rotors are supporting the full weight of the aircraft. In airplane mode, the rotors only have to overcome the aircraft's drag, said Brown, the rotorcraft expert. Air Force crews fly the heaviest Osprey variant because of all the special instruments they needed to allow to fly secret missions, such as conducting rescues or inserting special operation forces in hostile territory. In helicopter mode, they have to use an option called interim power to land safely, said Glover, the former Osprey squadron commander. The option surges more power, but they also can overtax the gears in the Osprey's transmission, known as the prop rotor gearbox. Bell, Boeing, and the Marines had said, "Hey, you're not supposed to use that thing very often. Well, we don't recommend it." "Well, the Air Force, we've got to use it because we are heavy," Glover said. "If you don't use it, you won't have the power to land." Japan's Defense Ministry blamed human error for its first most recent accident, where the Osprey tilted and struck the ground, because the pilots did not engage the interim power option as they hovered like a helicopter before takeoff. The ministry announced last week that the Osprey has been cleared to return to flight. The strain from helicopter mode shows in the Osprey's transmission. A total of 609 have had to be replaced in the past 10 years, according to data obtained by the AP. Wear and tear also puts a large demand on ground maintenance crews who closely track components in the aircraft's drive system to monitor strain. After each flight, they examine the Osprey's engines, transmissions, and the hydraulic lines for signs of stress. On the hydraulic lines, if one of those comes loose, it's a problem, said Master Sergeant Frank Williams, an Osprey maintenance supervisor at Cannon Air Force Base. You have to pay attention. In response to questions from the AP, the Marine Corps said the Osprey is still one of its safest aircraft. Over the past decade, the rate that it experienced the worst type of accident resulting in either death or loss of aircraft was 2.27 for every 100,000 hours of flight. The Marines said that compares with the 5.66 for its other heavy lift helicopter, the CH-53. Those numbers don't tell the whole story. The Marines' three most serious categories of accidents climbed from 2019 to 2023, even as the number of hours they flew dropped significantly, from 50,807 in fiscal year 2019 to 37,670 in 2023, according to data obtained by the AP. The Air Force's Osprey has a much higher rate of the worst type of accidents per 100,000 flight hours than its other major aircraft, and its incidents also climbed even as flight hours dropped. The AP also found that the rise in safety problems over the past 5 years largely involved the Osprey's engine air drive system. There were at least 35 instances where crews experienced an engine fire, power loss, or stall, 42 issues involving the prop rotors, and at least 72 instances of the gears inside the transmission or drive system becoming so stressed they flake off metal chips that can quickly endanger a flight. Pilots have to fly perfectly. The Osprey's complexity tests its crews. Pilots control the angle of the engines and prop rotors with a small notch wheel they move with their thumbs. It's sensitive to the touch. Too much of a nudge and the engine's angle changes by several degrees, and they have to watch a computer display to see the angle. As the engine rotor blades begin to rotate upward, the flight controls inside the cockpit change too, from working like the controls inside an airplane to operating like those in a helicopter. You have to just mentally switch while you're on approach what your hands are doing, said Osprey pilot Captain Christian Eels. The aircraft computer is designed to autocorrect for a pilot if their movement of the wheel could result in Osprey's internal components being damaged. But that adds to the danger if a pilot can't quickly force the analysis, which housed the engines upward to slow down the aircraft, he said. It will not prevent you from stalling, sinking rapidly, or entering any other unsafe flight, Lucy said. But if you're going too fast, it will not only prevent you from raising the nacelles to slow down. The flight control computers will bounce the nacelles forward to reduce strains on the gears, which speeds the Osprey up, Luce said. If there are other complications in flight, or a pilot is distracted or misses the significance of an aircraft warning light, those mistakes can quickly turn dangerous. Well, I'm afraid this is all the time we have for now. I'd like to thank you for joining us for Military Times. My name is Mark Love, and I hope that you'll join us next time.